Hi, this is John Floridis. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. Our guest today is the infamous String Dusters.
Remember,
this is John Floridis. Welcome to Musician Spotlight. I'm very pleased to welcome Chris Pandolfi and Andy Falco of the infamous String Dusters. Welcome, gentlemen. Glad to have you on the show.
Thanks for having us.
I'm sure that your music will be very familiar to a lot of our listeners. They have a actually brand new recording as we are recording this interview, Let It Go. And we are recording this interview in mid-April 2014. I want to tell listeners we're backstage at the Top Hat in Missoula. The band has now released 6 recordings, and that includes a Grammy-nominated single, Magic Number 9, on the recording Things That Fly, which I love that. See the title of the album. It's great. Great album title. Before we get any further, let's maybe mention the other members of the band and what instruments they play.
Sure, we got Andy Hall plays dobro, Jeremy Garrett plays fiddle, and Travis Book plays bass.
Let's talk a little bit about the Boston beginnings and the Berklee School of Music. I've talked to numerous musicians of all different kinds of genres who've had their own Berklee experience.
Yeah, you know, Andy Hall and I both went to Berklee, and I was actually the first ever banjo principal at the Berklee College of Music. And around the time that I was graduating from Dartmouth, where I got my undergrad degree, you know, I decided that I wanted to go to music school and sort of afford myself the opportunity to have a little bit more time to practice and meet folks. And through my banjo teacher, Tony Trishka, I teamed up with Matt Glazer, who was the chair of the strings department at Berklee. And he helped me to get in with banjo as my principal instrument. Now, Andy Hall had just finished up there, but he was an electric guitar player, you know, and Berklee, which is predominantly a school that's sort of rooted in this jazz curriculum, brings in all of these eclectic influences, these different styles. And I think any great school teaches you how to learn, how to continue to learn and evolve as a musician for a lifetime. And I still stay in touch with a few of my professors there. David Newsom is still a friend and mentor to me. And, you know, I know Andy still has some ties there. And now they actually have an accredited program with banjo, mandolin, the American Roots program. So I was back last fall teaching all the 9 banjo students. So really cool to see not only how the school has evolved, but how it's embraced just what's going on with acoustic music, you know, is more popular than ever. So we have a lot of cool ties to Berklee, and I hope that we are always involved there in some capacity.
Now let's maybe go from that experience to the origins of the group and how things really got started with the whole experience.
Andy Hall and I met in Boston, and Andy was living in Nashville at the time, and he was playing with Jeremy Garrett, and then Falco and I moved to Nashville right around the same time, and then we met Travis at the following IBMA. So like I say, all these sort of worlds were colliding, and then ultimately when we decided that we wanted to start a band, a very sort of obvious group of people came to mind. And then about a year later, once we sort of became solidly the lineup that we were, you know, that was to become the String Dusters, was when Andy joined. And you know, that the advent of the band was a little bit slow going in the early days, but like I say, ultimately when we decided we wanted to both play our own music and own our own business, you know, it was this very sort of obvious group of people, and we made the call and we did it.
One of the things that I did come across in doing some research was the quote, the group likes to mine the past and look forward to the unknown. I like that. It's an interesting choice. Rather than looking to the future, looking to the unknown. And I wanted you guys to speak on that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that we're trying to just, you know, make our own way in our own music. And we have a lot of eclectic musical backgrounds as far as stylistically and, you know, bands and experiences that we've all had. And I feel like we've really, in the last few years, have come into our own and really able to be String Dusters by letting all of these influences out. So I think that's sort of the unknown part, which is great. And, you know, every night we have sections of the music that are improvisational sections that you really don't know where it's going to go. And it's exciting for us and hopefully for the audience as well.
We need new dreams tonight.
Well, speaking of mining the past, this is not necessarily the bluegrass past, but I was intrigued by the band's arrangement of In God's Country by U2. Talk a little bit about maybe that tune specifically and how you look for material written by other people, whether it's famous Irish rock bands or the most traditional bluegrass music. How does the band come about the material, I guess?
Originally, we struggled a little bit with that arrangement. We tried doing it various different ways, and it wasn't really, jiving the way we were hoping it would. And we kept trying it, we kept at it, and then we approached it more like we were thinking of almost like an old-time tune. And I think once we sort of thought of it like that, I think the arrangement sort of then became what it became. And but it took us a little while to work that one out.
But it also, that definitely shed some light on what makes a lot of our music unique. The music's the selection writing process, it goes on forever. But for us, the arranging process is really what brings a lot of this music to life and sort of makes it essentially string duster. And I think, apropos of your last question, that's where you take all these technical things, these things that you know how to do with your instrument, and you fit them into the music. And that's where we spend, people ask us, when do you guys rehearse? Well, we play so much on the road that we don't really rehearse, and a sound check will run over this or that. But several times a year, we'll hole up in a house and work on music all day and night, which is really such an awesome time for me, like the payoff of the whole experience. I love it. It's when we're getting in there and making the music. And that's the arranging process, is taking these songs and figuring out how can we, with this set of skills on these various bluegrass instruments and all these things that we know how to play, how can we make the best music? How can we complement the song the best? How can we work as a group to present this thing? And In God's Country was just one of those things that, like Andy said, it was this old-time approach, and here comes this lick, and then all of a sudden this sort of droning sound, and then the song, and it just all kind of came together. But the writing is a big part, but then the arranging is so much of how we take what we know how to do on this set of instruments and figure out how to create music with it.
This is John Floridas. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today to Chris Pandolfi and Andy Falco of the infamous String Dusters. I want to talk specifically about the new project. As I mentioned, we're recording this interview backstage at the Top Hat. It's mid-April 2014, and Let It Go, if I'm not mistaken, it's just been released, correct? Let's talk a little bit about this project.
It's been a long time in the making, and a lot of soul searching in these early steps of trying to decipher why even make a recording. I mean, it's a strange time to be a band. Our business is so predicated on touring. That's what we've done from the early going. But with everything that's changed with the internet and the way that music is bought and sold, it's really not clear to a band that doesn't have some mega infrastructure behind it, why do we make an album? And after a lot of soul searching, I think we realized that not only is it sort of your biggest splash that you make, your biggest chance to reach out to people, but even more importantly for us, it's a time when a band really evolves aesthetically. It's a time when there's something that really makes sense about a collection of a dozen songs. It's not a single. It's like you're really going in there and saying, okay, this is our new set of material. This is a statement as a whole. And we are all album lovers and music fans in our own right. But album lovers, I mean, we're in our, mid-30s, and we've been around for a long time. We have been music fans from a time before there was Spotify or Pandora. So we self-produced this album, and we just said, let's make the best songs that we can. And it was, like I say, it was a great process, and it was a big step forward, I think, aesthetically, sort of for the evolution of the band.
Yeah, and just mainly going in and just trying to, what we were talking about before with the development of better songs and really concentrating on the songs and the selection of songs and how they work together on the album. And, we've done layering and stuff like that in the past on our records, and I think we went into this record thinking, we would have as much of that stuff as we've ever done. But actually it kind of went the other way, and it became something that was more organic. I think it became something that was just the most cohesive album that we've ever made.
word of hope you could not send. I can't hear, I need no vision. I'll find a path with the wind. I'll get away again. I'll get away again. But decisions were never made. I'll get away again. I'll get away again. Hey, I'll get away. It's not about how far or if I'll even say. Yeah, but when I get there,
Andy and Chris, a subject I wanted to get into that will be near and dear to our listeners' hearts, and that's floating down rivers, whether musical endeavors or not. And I wanted to talk about this experience you had with floating down the Salmon River, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, doing some playing, and also having that either be a continuation or be an inspiration for an interest in water sustainability issues.
We did a great trip last summer with a group called Idaho River Adventures, and we floated the Middle Fork of the Salmon, an outdoor enthusiast stream, one of the most sort of legendary trips. And part of a kind of bigger process for us of realizing in recent years that we have a lot in common with the outdoor industry in terms of who are fans of our music and who are fans of these various brands. And there's a lot of overlap there. So we have made some great alliances in the recent past with companies like Keen and Clean Canteen, Osprey, and then also nonprofits like currently the Conservation Alliance, and last summer the American Rivers group was on board as our nonprofit, and we were giving $1 from every ticket sold to American Rivers, and then we organized this trip and brought some of our biggest fans, played music, certainly drew a lot of inspiration from this trip, but just it really a continuation and sort of evolution of this process of saying, you know, this is something that not only matters to us, but matters to our fans, is a way to reach more people, and is something that is very true to us. You know, when I was in college, I was an environmental studies major, and the summer that I learned to play banjo, I was a fly fishing guide right down the road in Livingston on the 63 Ranch. So, you know, I was out here living in Montana when I really got into playing music, and then you move to Nashville, and like I say, you spend 10 years in your bedroom practicing, and you can't afford, you don't have the money, you don't have the time. So now, years later, to be getting back into this sort of thing as a conservationist, as an avid fly fisherman, an avid outdoorsman, is not only a dream because of the recreational opportunities, but it also, I gotta say, it gives a lot of meaning to these 200 days on the year, that if all you were ever trying to do was sell tickets and make a buck, it's a lot. It's a lot of work and it gets old. So to be connecting with people on another level, to be trying to do a good thing and help some of these nonprofits and just spread the word about what we're doing, spread the word about what these groups are doing. That's all part of the Middle Fork of the Salmon trip and part of what we're doing with these tours and these brand alliances in general. So I think it's a great thing. I think it's working, and you know, a big thank you to those groups because they've helped us so much. And I hope it's something that we continue to do. You know, as this whole thing progresses.
Now, Chris, saying that you were a fly fisherman and fly fisher guide in Montana, when you're on the road, do you take Andy to your favorite spots, or is that like an undisclosed location? And you know,
I don't blame him. He's gonna be tying all my knots if he takes me.
I'll change your strings, but I'm not gonna show you. I'm not gonna show you where my favorite spot is.
We've had not only the Middle Fork of the Salmon trip, but thanks to lots of awesome people along the way, very cool recreational opportunities. And, you know, it's cool because it's not just me, it's all of us. And, you know, our team as well. And it's a chance to take this thing, like I say, that can really be grinding so many days on the road and turn it into something that you enjoy, which if all you're ever focused on is where are we going to be in 10 years, not where are we going to be this afternoon, then it does. It starts to get a little old.
We have this unique opportunity to integrate, you know, our job, which is, you know, going out and making music, which we love, but also living life, which is important. And if you're going to be away as much as we're away, I think it's important that you have to live life. And, you know, all these partnerships with outdoor companies and all that stuff, they're very, you know, genuine sort of partnerships. It's not like we're running out and just trying to get some bucks from ExxonMobil because, you know, I mean, that wouldn't really be our thing, you know. But, you know, it's about living life and enjoying life as well. And it's really important to be able to spend time with also fans and stuff like that doing these activities.
If I look like I'm weary, it's only for now. I'll get my rest in the ground. There's a lot left to do in the time that remains before my last sun comes around. Again, I want.
thestringdusters.com is the name of the website. Let It Go is the most recent recording by the infamous String Dusters. And Chris Pandolfi and Andy Falco, thank you so much for making time to talk shop with us here on Musician Spotlight. I'll also mention, too, very strong presence on social media for the group, Facebook and so forth. And I was teasing you guys initially when we before we started the interview that you even have a Facebook page of set lists for your shows. So that's, I think, a real good indication of the kind of connection you're making with listeners.
I hope so. Just make sure you don't call them set list nerds. They're set list geeks. They told me themselves they feel strongly about this, so it's important.
Well, thanks so much for making time to visit with us.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
This is John Floridas. You've been listening to Musician Spotlight. Our guest today has been the infamous String Dusters. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org. You can also find us on Facebook, as well as our own website, musicianspotlight.org. Our program is now available as a downloadable podcast from those websites, as well as from iTunes. Special thanks to the Top Hat Lounge for this interview. Musician Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.